It failed you. Welcome to the Village Oak Tree Sunday edition for August 11th. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell. Thank you once again for joining me on another Sunday. As I said in the midweek podcast, there's so much going on every day now, it's hard to keep up with it all. This is kind of a spillover from last Wednesday that I said I would do. And it's simply because there's just so much new stuff taking place nearly every day. So let's get into that. Just to give you an idea of what I brought up here, this is just news stories that, not just news stories, but blog articles and things like that that I've come across the last couple of days, and I just couldn't ignore them. So I'll try to keep this short here as much as I can, but there's a lot to talk about. I don't want to rehash all the same stuff over and over again that I talked about last week, and also stuff that some of it I know you see in the news, the same stuff that I see a lot of times. Some of it you don't have access to. So let's talk about that. So my first topic today comes after reading another article from a guy by the name of Nate Baer, and he writes a lot about COVID stuff. And he talks about the ongoing COVID pandemic that everyone has decided to largely ignore. Okay. And that's the big problem with this, is that I don't care what anybody says to you. I don't care what the government says to you. The infection rate for COVID is just right through the roof. Okay. It's everywhere. And what's worrisome is, yet sure, we're being reassured by the government that it's okay, and so on. But nobody's talking about this long COVID. So this is one of the things I want to get into a little bit. So in his article on his Substack page, he talks about how many of the Olympic athletes got laid low due to COVID infections here the last 3 or 4 weeks. For a few, it cost them a win. One young man fell out at the finish line due to lack of breath caused by a COVID infection he had contracted a couple of days ago prior to his race in the Olympic Village. And others reported similar circumstances. This young man in particular got knocked from a gold down to a bronze. Because he couldn't hang on long enough. And yet the world governments around the world keep telling everybody everything is fine. Nothing to worry about. We're taking care of everything as counties and states within the U.S. enact mask bans. In Europe, masking is looked at with disdain, much like the U.S. In underdeveloped countries with serious lack of access to the latest vaccines and masks, it comes down to massive infections and a lot of people dying. If you don't want to hear about any of that, you won't hear about any of that in the news feeds either. It's almost never talked about anymore. In the U.S., the elections are taking up most of the mainstream news, with wars in the Middle East and Ukraine bringing up a close second. I still wear a mask whenever I go out anywhere that if I know I'm going to be in close proximity to other humans. We open our windows here as much as possible, weather permitting, and run our air purifier whenever I feel like the air is tainted, such as when I start sneezing a lot. Even though all of these world-famous athletes got sidelined with COVID, how much did anyone see of that in the news about the Olympics? Very little. A couple of brief stories, and that was that. As Ms. Jessica Wildfire writes about every week in her publication, Okay, Doomer, COVID is far from gone. It's still infecting thousands of people every day as they go about their daily lives as if it's not there. I put the blame on the government to put the profits of their corporate donors above the health of their people whom they swore an oath to protect. There are many independent writers who talk about this constantly, such as Michael Campy and Nate Baer and Jessica Wildfire. The point of this is, why are the governments of the Western world gaslighting everyone into believing that COVID is nothing to worry about? As these writers tell us, it's not the initial COVID infection that's so bad, although for some it is a death sentence. It's long COVID that's the real killer. Long COVID is a lifelong, sometimes debilitating after effects of the COVID virus. This virus lingers in people's bodies, taking out organ tissue and nervous systems and other parts of the body, brains and everything else, causing disablement to the point of permanent disability. In other words, the inability to work 40 or more hours a week. In a capitalist society, if you can't work, you don't eat. You lose a roof over your head, and you become homeless eventually. The U.S. already has one of the largest homeless populations of any developed country in the world, and long COVID just adds to the growing numbers. I was chatting with some people last week who have contracted long COVID, and it's upended their lives. They have had to change dietary habits and other norms they were used to in order to accommodate this new reality. Mostly, they complain of the constant fatigue this causes. In other words, they're tired all the time. Yet, our governments tell us that there is nothing to worry about. Get your annual vaccines, like flu shots, and you'll be fine. Meanwhile, ignoring the high death toll and disablement of a large segment of the population. Developing countries are already suffering in a lot of places from low birth rates and a high death toll from COVID, and those numbers decrease significantly. But we are told, don't worry, you'll be fine. Go about your normal daily routine. If you catch COVID again and again, so what? It's like the flu. You know, maybe that's got something to do behind the scenes about why they're trying to do away with abortion rights. They want to increase the birth rate. Well, maybe because COVID has taken so many people out. They so conveniently forget to tell us that flu also kills a lot of people every year. Not near as much as COVID and its derivatives, but still. Will COVID eventually get enough attention again someday? Only if the morgues start piling up again beyond the ability of the healthcare facilities to take care of the bodies again. Since the majority of the people who catch COVID seem to get over it in a couple of days and resume their normal lives, nothing else matters. Got to make that money. The engine of the commerce must keep going. And if people fall out, replace them with healthy ones. Which brings us to another topic of consideration. Mass layoffs. Mass layoffs across the tech world right now, especially in the United States. Intel just recently laid off 15,000 workers, due in large part of losing a significant amount of revenue from lost markets in China. There are no more markets for the American tech products anywhere else in the world anymore. Cisco, one of the largest commercial tech companies in the world, has laid off a significant amount of its workforce lately. Most of this is in large part due to the tech trade war that the U.S. is carrying on against China, and China is retaliating by not doing business with American companies anymore. China doesn't need U.S. products for their tech factories anymore. They can get what they need from places like India, Vietnam, and other places. This has started to kill off what's left the American tech industry. The United States is starting to feel the punch of their trade wars and support for the genocidal Israeli regime and the war in Ukraine, which is all having an effect on the EU. They're heavily tied with the U.S. industries, trade, and foreign policy, and it's killing them slowly. This continued fear of Russia, created by the U.S., is slowly strangling them. This is having a dire effect on the working classes in all of these countries. The anti-immigration riots in the UK are just another symptom of a larger problem. The U.S. is on the verge of suffering similar to this fall after the November elections. Their riots won't be about immigration so much as it will be about the perception of election fraud. The word across certain news media is that the MAGA cultists will riot in the streets, burning buildings and hurting people in their rage if their cult leader is not elected to the presidency in November. President Biden gave an interview earlier today talking about that very thing, among others. The interview is supposed to be about why he decided to drop out at the last minute. This is not the first time he's told the media that he doesn't expect the MAGA people to accept defeat quietly. The main reason these people are so mad at the government is because they're tired of the government not taking care of their needs like they're supposed to. Little things like environmental pollution, mass poverty, support for wars that are draining away the money needed to repair domestic infrastructure, healthcare, and so many other domestic issues that affect people's everyday lives. So support for these wars is down to less than 30% now, amongst the American public. This is probably only by the military-industrial complex, whose workers will vote for whatever it will take to let them keep their jobs. That is what the U.S. working class has come down to, supporting whatever in order to keep their jobs, if they can. very little else matters. Most certainly watching their tax money being spent on a rogue nation in the Middle East is the least of their priorities. The number one priority for the American working class is keeping their jobs, keeping their houses, feeding their families. Little else matters. For the comfortable ones, they can worry about Israel and Ukraine. Which brings us to the Democratic candidate, Kamala Harris, again. She's running around the country with her new running mate, giving rousing speeches at election rallies everywhere. Yesterday, Nevada. Before that, Arizona. The Midwest. And then places like Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana. She's really making the rounds around the country right now. What stood out from all of these rallies was the dismissal of pro-Palestine activists in Detroit. The lack of policy so far, other than more of the same, towards the genocide in Gaza. No mention of Ukraine, and so on. How does that sound like the Biden campaign? In other words, she's pretty much mirroring Biden's policies while trashing Trump. But because she is not stumbling or mixing her words or forgetting things, she's got everybody all excited, especially since Trump and the MAGA GOP are not doing anything other than behaving like schoolyard bullies. Most people, other than the diehard MAGA cultists, are tired of the lack of substance and are looking at the new kid on the block. VP Harris is riding the wave and taking it for all it's worth. Who can blame her? It is a given that she will trash Trump during the debates in September, making him look like the clownish buffoon that he is. Everyone will be expecting her to break out her prosecutor, lawyer, persona and tear him up. Much like two gladiators in a coliseum. While all the attention is on the election rallies, Biden is still throwing taxpayer money at Israel in the form of more military equipment, along with the billions of support money that the U.S. has always given. The latest is several million dollars worth of JDAM guided bomb equipment, as if the Israelis need any more help bombing more Palestinians and Lebanese. These guys are supposed to provide better accuracy for the bombs being dropped by the Israeli Air Force. What the Biden administration fails to understand is that Israel could care less about the precision munitions. They will use the JDAM guidance systems to drop bombs on Hamas and Hezbollah targets, but without any care about civilian casualties that it causes. The bombing of schools, killing 100 or more refugees in the last day or so, is your example of how much they care. Did the U.S. condemn the IDF soldiers accused of committing rape caught on CCTV that was passed around the world? No. Instead, they believe the Israelis, the government, that a certain military unit accused of war crimes in the West Bank has been reformed. So the U.S. lifted the sanctions, and this unit is now able to receive U.S. largesse to keep killing Palestinians with impunity. They'll just do a better job of hiding it from now on. With all the tensions over whether Iran and their proxy Hezbollah will conduct a major retaliation for the Israeli incursion into sovereign territory to conduct assassination soon, the U.S. has decided to sell offensive weapons to Saudi Arabia. Saudis have promised not to use them on the Houthis in Yemen. Yeah, right. Read between the lines. Ask yourself, why did this deal go through now? Saudi Arabia has been asking for this stuff for several years, so why now? It shouldn't take a lot of brain cells to answer that question. The U.S. is hedging its bets in the region and thinks that by arming the Saudis, the king will back the U.S. in any play towards the Iranians or other actors who may be in violent conflict with Israel. For anyone who's been paying attention to the Saudis lately, King Salman and his son Mohammed bin Salman do what they want. They look out for themselves and their kingdom and care little for anyone else, unless it's good for them. Getting involved in a shooting war on the side of the U.S. and Israel is not in their best interest, no matter what the contract for the weapon says. Move out of the Middle East and into Western Europe. Ukraine launched a major offensive across the Russian border into Kursk a few days ago. They don't have many troops left, so this is kind of like the German offensive during the winter of 1944 and 1945 that they called the Battle of the Bulge. The difference this time, Ukraine has plenty of supplies, courtesy of the West, but very few soldiers anymore. That's something the West is not supplying. The story is that these soldiers were transferred from the border of Belarus to become the tip of the spear in the Kursk. They supposedly are a lot better troops than the ones on the front line currently. As of a report today, these troops are 30 kilometers into Russian territory. All just to show Putin that they can do this. They think to scare him into a total withdrawal, allowing Ukraine to keep their territory on the eastern border, give him back the Crimean Peninsula, and letting Ukraine join NATO. I'm waiting for reports that these troops are surrounded, cut off in enemy territory, and the remnants forced to surrender. That's the most likely scenario. Then what? What will Zelensky do next? Or what will the Ukrainian government do next? Such a waste of soldiers. This is what stupid leaders do. The stupid ones don't know when they're finished, and a lot of people die unnecessarily. Much like the leaders who won't admit that COVID is still killing hundreds of people in their countries and choose to ignore the practices that would mitigate a large portion of that, such as mass mandates in crowded public places, subsidizing vaccine research and delivery of vaccines and other small things. Such is the new world we find ourselves in, where commerce and corporate profits mean more than human life. It's like they know this on some level and choose to live in the short term, taking all they can for themselves while they're still alive. It's every person for themselves, fight and claw to get rich at everyone else's expense. They don't seem to care if the world falls down around them or the kind of world that they're leaving for future generations. I think about this a lot lately. How can I make this world become a better place for my children and grandchildren and future generations? I will admit, I feel like I'm losing ground every week with these days, and that makes me sad and a little depressed. There are things that we the people can do to take back our country from the oligarchs running it, but are we willing to make the sacrifices necessary to make that happen? From where I sit and the things I see, I don't think the people in the U.S. are quite there yet, nor is Europe. It will probably take something major to set off massive strikes and demonstrations in the streets in order for the government to wake up and see the unrest that's been brewing for years. Then it'll be their response that will determine what happens next. If the response is levied against the peaceful pro-Palestine protesters this year is any indication, this could get bloody. There are more and more stories coming out about governments from the White House all the way down to local mayors and county officials arresting and investigating journalists who are trying to do their jobs in these so-called democratic countries. I heard about a couple here in the U.S. last week. One notably very public critic of U.S. foreign policy had a search warrant issued for his house and media material. He has been accused of being in the service of a foreign agency and not registering this under the FARA Act, in this case, Russia. Another journalist was arrested for walking with pro-Palestine protesters and videoing them as they supposedly committed vandalism against some wealthy people's homes. These people are doing their jobs, which they're being paid for. I guess they have a problem with who's paying them. In each of these cases and more, there is no physical evidence to back up these allegations, but the authorities are using the local police and federal authorities to carry out these harassments of journalists across the country to shut off their First Amendment rights, much like dismantling the First Amendment right to peacefully protest against foreign policy. This is what the Western world has become, an authoritative oligarchy, and nothing will change after November. It didn't change much in the summer EU and UK elections, and doesn't look to change much in the US after November when the Democrats just change faces. At this point, unless Trump does a serious U-turn and actually comes up with a serious plan for his presidency, the U.S. will just continue its death spiral under the Democrats. That's all I want to say today. Let me now read to you another chapter from Michael Campy's ongoing serial dystopian future story about what the U.S. will look like when it finally collapses, to wrap things up for this Sunday edition of the Village Oak Tree.
I want to take this minute to explain how you can support this podcast and tell you about my book. This podcast is free to subscribe to on all the major mobile podcast apps, on my YouTube channel, Crown of Biha. For the first 30 days on my Substack page, Crown of Biha, the Tree of Life, at Substack.com. With that in mind, I'm asking for donations of any amount. I decided that I would rather ask for donations instead of charging subscriptions, so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast everywhere in the world. All I'm asking for is help in defraying the cost to produce and distribute this podcast and maintain my website. Set up a donations tab on the Village Oak Tree webpage at rss.com and on my website at www.crownofbeehaw.com. Link to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you. Now let me tell you about my book. It's entitled The Fugitives in a New United States, which can be found at major online book retailers around the world, such as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Lulu, and many others. It's available in hardcover, paperback, and digital ebook form. You can also buy a hardcover or a paperback edition from me directly through the bookstore page on my website. This is a fictional story about what the United States might look like by 2031 under an authoritarian religious government. It's full of drama, action, and romance, but I wrote it for young adults and older, so it's safe. Look for Fugitives in a New United States at your favorite online book retailer, and I hope you enjoy it. I appreciate your time and support, no matter how you choose to do so, and I thank you very much for taking the time out for me. The Priest, formerly known as Bob, Part 8, by Michael Campy. The New Normal. I'd promised myself I would never use that phrase, but here I was standing in the middle of the street, dressed like a priest, with someone whose head I just bashed into a bloody pulp lying dead on the ground, and a little boy, maybe 10 years old, standing there staring at me, and I just couldn't think of any other way to describe it. What happens now? Am I a father? Am I a big brother? Am I a disinterested third party? Since I saved the kid, am I responsible for him now? I look over, and he's still staring at me. I've never been a brilliant conversationalist, and I had no idea how to talk to a kid. I wondered if you could talk to them like they were just small adults, or was there a special vocabulary you had to use? What's your name? I asked him. Which one? He said. What, you've got more than one? There is more than one. How many, then? He looked up and appeared to be thinking. He then began to mouth words and count on his fingers. Then he said, hey, kid. Hey, you little bastard. Hey, you little shit. Hey, you little fucker. I think that's all. I kind of remember another one from a long time ago, but it disappeared. Do you think we should pick another one for you? Don't you like any of those? He asked. They're all right. They're just not very nice, I replied. Does the name have to be nice? He asked. Doesn't have to be, but it's better if it's nice. What's your name? He asked. I used to be Bob, but I'm thinking of changing it. Don't you like Bob? It's okay, but it doesn't seem to fit anymore, especially after bashing that guy's head in. So it has to fit, and it has to be nice, he said. Yeah, I told him. Those aren't the only two things that matter, but a name that fits and a name that's nice is a good start. He was staring at me in a way that said he wasn't entirely convinced, or that he was completely confused, one or the other. Those two looks had always seemed related to me, although I couldn't tell you why. Bob's rules of grammar and usage had something to do with it. It's night, he said. I'm impressed. You just picked right up on that. Smart, aren't you? He cocked his head to one side like a dog. All right, pick a name, any name. You get to be anyone you want. There are no rules anymore. If you decide later on that you don't like the name you picked, then you can just pick another one. So what's it going to be? He did the looking off into space thing again, which I assumed meant he was thinking. I think I want to be called Tiki. That came out of the blue. What the fuck kind of name is Tiki? I asked. He had flinched when I said fuck, and it made me think that he had some bad experience with people who said that word. Sorry, kid. I just didn't expect that particular choice. How did that come up? He reached in his pocket and pulled out what looked like an old postcard. It was dirty and torn and faded. One word was still legible. Tiki. Where did you get this? I said. I always had it. So what? It's always just been in your pocket? Yes. Someone put it there a long time ago. I think it's supposed to remind me of something, but I don't remember what. Where were you when they gave it to you? I asked. He looked off the way, it seems, he does when he's trying to remember something. Beach, he said. A faraway beach. How did you get here? People kept taking me from other people and making me go with them. That man, he pointed at the dead priest, he stole me from some other men. He told me the other men were going to hurt me, and he took me, and then he hurt me.
I guess that I had been so focused on my own shit that I hadn't spent a lot of time thinking about the shit that was happening to other people. That thought came on like a freight train. There must be so many other people like this kid that were being abused, tortured, and probably even killed. Right then and there, the concept of the priest became a reality. This was as altruistic as anything I'd ever done. I didn't know if I was up for this level of altruism. I'd never been overly concerned about people, but after seeing the scared rabbit look on the kid's face and hearing about what he had been through, it kind of changed me. And fuck me, I wasn't sure I was ready for another change. So here it is. I set out to find some art to brighten up the house, and I end up saving a kid, somehow becoming this wandering, protect what needs protecting, and kill what needs killing sort of person. Kind of like a hero or something, only not as brave and prone to throwing up after any type of heroic endeavor. I wondered if heroes threw up after their fights. You never got to see it in the movies, but I'm sure one or two of them must have at some point. I was going to have to give this some serious thought. I would have to find out if there's some kind of list that details the qualifications you need to have in order to become a hero. And I would also need to know if there was a cutoff number, like if you have two of the qualifications, then you're not ready. If you get up to about five qualifications, it's better, but you still need some work. And once you get to 10 or beyond, then you can comfortably call yourself a hero, although I would never be comfortable calling myself a hero. I wouldn't contradict anyone if they called me a hero, but I don't think I would just call myself a hero. I've always suffered from imposter syndrome, so I was going to have to take that into account, which might work out for me, because then I could be self-deprecating in a kind of, aw shucks, if it weren't nothing sort of way. Like with everything else, and as far as I knew, I had time to put this thing together because, well, there wasn't much else to do. I'm not sure how long I stood there thinking about this, but then I snapped out of it and remembered the kid. I looked around for him and saw him curled up by a rock in the ditch, sound asleep. Having spent the better part of the last few years staying away from people, I was a little shocked by this apparent. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it and you'll return again for another episode of The Village Oak Tree. Please like, subscribe, and reply on the YouTube videos or the audio podcast where that's available. This helps with spreading the word about what I'm trying to do, like so many others, which is to shout about all the bad things our governments are doing to us all over the world. If enough of us decide that we don't want to take it anymore, we can force the governments to do right by us as we elected them to do. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May your hand always be stretched out in friendship and never in want. Slán go fóill. Adaption. The kid had just been attacked and almost raped by a violent pervert, and he shrugs it off and goes to sleep. There were most likely a lot more people out there that were adapting this way, and that would make them either really good to have around or really dangerous to be around. Something to look forward to as I put the kid in the basket. Something to look forward to as I put the kid in the big basket on the bike and began the long trudge, pushing the little fucker up the hill. To be continued. So that's all I have for you here this week. I'm gonna let this go. I appreciate you tuning in once again. Basically, I use this as a way to ramble off my thoughts. It allows me to vent off what I see in the news, and hopefully I'm doing some kind of good in the world. So with that, I'll talk to you again next week. Sláinte. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it and you'll return again for another episode of The Village Oak Tree. Please like, subscribe, and reply on the YouTube videos or the audio podcast where that's available. This helps with spreading the word about what I'm trying to do, like so many others, which is to shout about all the bad things our governments are doing to us all over the world. If enough of us decide that we don't want to take it anymore, we can force the governments to do right by us as we elected them to do. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May your hand always be stretched out in friendship and never in want. Slán go fóill.